mentioned how interest rates and employment rates move in the same direction. Does that hold true regionally? As in, a place like South Dakota has very high employment rates. Does that mean it's going to have larger inflation rates in prices and goods?
It's a good question. So this is something we've actually worked on across at the Minneapolis Fed. We've done work on cross-state variation, SMSA, so metropolitan area, variation in employment and prices. But one thing you have to be careful about is, as was mentioned in our question and answer session earlier, is that the technical term is fixed effects, that some states, some regions just have very high employment, period, over a very long run. And that by itself does not create high inflation. It's relative to that base of what your long-run employment picture is. That variation can we found in our work, will create inflationary. If you have high employment relative to that long-run base, then you'll have higher inflationary pressures. Lower than that, lower inflationary pressures.
Okay. Have you done any analysis on the effect of the dollar's appreciation meeting the Fed's inflation goals? I mean, obviously it affects import prices, it affects net exports. What's the net sort of impact you see so far?
Yeah, I would describe that as quite modest in my assessment. Trade is an important part of the U.S. economy, but still relatively small, and so I don't see that pass through at this stage as being all that material. And again, from the point of, as you know, Steve, from the point of view of monetary policy, it's not about what's happened in the past. It's looking forward, and just because the dollar's gone up for the last couple of months, it's going to keep going up.
Yeah.
So.
Are you surprised, given what you've said about low inflation and how you expect it to stick around, that almost all of your colleagues actually seem quite happy with raising rates in the face of that?
Yeah, I won't speak about my colleagues' positions, but certainly a lot of public conversation you hear about monetary policy is about the possibility to raise rates in the coming year, in 2015. I think that, for me, the way I think about this is that we have two mandates, but no one is going to criticize us for creating too many jobs. So the cost of monetary policy is not that employment's going to get accommodated monetary policy is not that we're going to create too many jobs. The cost of it is that you could make inflation too high. The other possible risk cost of it is financial stability concerns, and that's something you should always – the reason I don't mention that today is because I don't see those as material at the current point in time. We should be monitoring that. But just because unemployment is falling, that's not a reason to raise rates, because there's no harm in having low unemployment in the country, except insofar as that generates wage pressures and shows up in inflation, but I don't see that in my inflation outlook.
Even though there is some people who do point to our current level of unemployment as being, at least historically, a place where wages really do start to rise, and quite quickly.
Yeah, I think, history matters. We want to keep track of how history matters in terms of the past. Another key, but as I was mentioning before, a key component in my thinking is that the biggest predictor of our future inflation is where inflation has been. And the fact that inflation has been as low as it has over the last 3 years, and then really on average going back 7 years, that's the biggest drag that I have in my inflation outlook. Certainly, the diminution in slack, and I think slack has come down in the U.S. labor markets. That diminution in slack is part of the inflation outlook and should be part of your inflation outlook. But actually, when you do try to forecast inflation, that doesn't show up that much. This actually work that was done in the Minneapolis Fed by Andrew Akison and Leo Hanian shows that it's very hard to forecast inflation. You just use the slack component contribution to that is relatively small. The bigger forecaster is where inflation's been.
You say no one will complain about too many jobs, and here in South Dakota we kind of are struggling to occupy some open positions here. How can we curb an issue like that, raising wages, just trying to fill these open spots that we've literally been struggling with the last few years?
Yeah, I think that this is certainly an issue I hear in South Dakota, that it's that there's open positions that are hard to fill. I think the usual economics thinking about this at a high level is that that should generate wage pressures, upward wage pressures, and wages go up enough, then we should start to see people come to South Dakota to work here because wages have gone up sufficiently. The puzzle here is that I hear people say that, but at the same time, you don't see the wages going up, and so in the data at least. And so that tension is one that's been hard for me to square at least.
So that's a South Dakota. Do you think it's a unique to South Dakota problem? Because I know in North Dakota, they have sort of a similar problem with, you know, they've got a ton of open jobs. Employment there is, you know, extremely high. Prices there are also extremely high, and wages have skyrocketed.
So in North Dakota, certainly, it's a really good example of there's a lot of demand for workers. Employment's gone up and wages have gone up a lot. But in South Dakota, I hear there's demand for workers, but I don't see the commensurate increases in wages I would have expected associated with that.
So if next year doesn't seem to be the right time to raise rates, do you have any time frame in mind right now for when that would happen?
The reason it's not the right time to raise rates is because the inflation outlook has remained soft. I'm predicting now the inflation outlook will remain soft, sufficiently soft. When I go to those meetings in 2015, my two-year ahead outlook, I'm predicting now will remain below 2%. If that changes, then that will be the time to raise rates. I think the better way to be thinking about this is, it's not when we're going to raise rates, but what are the conditions that we need to see before we raise rates? And for me, a necessary condition is that the 1 to 2 year ahead of outlook for inflation is back to 2%. And yeah, so I'll just stop there.
There are some language shifts in the speech on liftoff and labor market characterization, and just wondering how, if you're thinking has changed since the past month or in the
so what, you're going to have to help me out.
The distressingly weak and I'm just looking at prior speeches and the characterization for liftoff. And is your thinking changing recently?
The characterization of liftoff, I do think that the we've had a good year in terms of non-farm payroll growth. We've had a good year in terms of declining unemployment rate. I would like to have seen a little better year in terms of employment population than we've seen, but you put that all together, I think that I might use a term like weak as opposed to distressingly weak at this stage relative to, say, a year ago. I'm not sure about the characterization of liftoff, what you have in mind. I continue to think that, and I've thought for some time, that a necessary condition for us to begin to contemplate raising rates is that we have to see the 1 to 2 year ahead outlook for inflation be at 2%. You might be willing to wait longer than that in order to facilitate a more rapid decline in the unemployment rate. That would depend on conditions. But today I'm emphasizing the fact that I want to see that 1 to 2 year ahead outlook for inflation get back to 2% because that seems to be where the real tension is going to be.
Can I ask you a little bit about the language of the considerable time in the statement? There is talk that it will need to be changed because it's tied to the end of bond buying, which will end this month. What are your thoughts about that and about the implication that would give to readers of the statement about when rates might rise?
Yeah, I don't see any reason why that language necessarily have to change. Those two words you mentioned, considerable time, could remain in the statement as a reference point about the timing of liftoff of the initial increase in interest rates. Certainly, I think the language in the statement about asset purchases, if asset purchases do indeed end, as I expect them to do so this month, I do think that will mean that our language surrounding asset purchases will change. But I think that phrase considerable time could still be useful to the committee even after that.
And do you view that phrase considerable time as I think you've talked before about forward guidance and it being in some sense a commitment or a promise to keep rates lower than you might otherwise think them to be? Are you thinking of considerable time in those terms?
You know, I think considerable time is, I as you'll recall, I descended in March with the introduction of this terminology, and it's sufficiently flexible that it incorporates, I think, my own perspective that we want to see the right conditions before we want to raise rates, and those right conditions for me are that we want to see the 1 to 2 year outlook for inflation get back to 2%. With that said, it's vague, and I think that that vagueness is that lack of clarity is a problem for the committee because it's not clear that we are as fully committed to our 2% inflation target from achieving it from below, as it were, as I think we need to be in the current environment. With that said, I think I think considerable time is conveying that. Is providing some guidance about the kind of conditions we want to see in place before we raise rates.
Can I ask you, Narayana, about asset purchases and their effect on the level of real interest rates? I mean, when QE2, QE3 were adopted, the argument was, okay, this is going to enable us to make interest rates lower than they otherwise would be, in effect, make negative real compensate for the fact that you can't lower the funds rate below zero. Okay, so now you're going to stop asset purchases, but you're still going to have them in your portfolio, presumably continuing to exert a downward effect on rates. So how do you take that into account, you know, as you judge how much accommodation is needed in an economy that is growing, you know, like 3%, unemployment is coming down, if you follow what I'm getting at.
Yeah, no, I hope the economy does keep growing at 3%. That is my forecast, but it has been my forecast in the past as well. This gets back to the question I was asked in the Q&A session, which is, if you tell me what economic conditions are, if you tell me that unemployment is at 5 and inflation's at 2, can you tell me what the interest rate's going to be? I cannot do that. And it depends on what I need to do in order to achieve those. Economic forces that are out there are going to determine what I need to set interest rates at in order to achieve our goals. You know, technically, this is because of what economists will refer to as the neutral interest rate, real rate of interest, changes over time because of changes in demand and supply for assets. I think, and that's, for me, has been the defining characteristic of the last 7 years, is that the demand for assets has gone, for safe assets in particular, but assets in general, have gone up a lot relative to the supply, and that means we have to keep interest rates low.
Just going back, you mentioned your GDP outlook. Is that 3% over the long term, or is that 3% for 14 or 15?
It's the 3% would be my outlook for 2015 at this stage. Certainly the first half of 2014 makes achieving 3% in 2014, I would say, highly unlikely at this stage.
Did Friday's report, did that influence or change your thinking at all?
You know, I thought both the content of the report for September and then the revisions in July and August, it gets back to the conversation I just had with Jeff. I think that the... you know, I think we are starting to see some improvements in labor markets. I think that's right. But, you know, in some sense, as long as the inflation outlook remains as low as it does, the discussion about labor markets is sort of almost irrelevant. from, it really is irrelevant from the point of view of monetary policy, except insofar as it's feeding into your inflation outlook. And even that effect is relatively small. So it's, the inflation outlook should be the dominant story right now when you think about monetary policy. As long as that remains low, there's no reason to be rushing into. We should be keeping rates low in order to stimulate demand, as long as the inflation outlook is as low as it is.
So are you advocating since interest rates seem to have so much focus, what policies are you advocating to address inflation if kind of this interest rate discussion really, except for the mere fact of keeping it the same, doesn't really influence the inflation concerns you have?
I think everything in monetary policy, the level of interest rates at the current moment in time is not the defining characteristic of monetary policy. Monetary policy is about expectations management, about the communication, about the stance of how the stance of policy will evolve in response to conditions. And I think, as I was talking about with Anne, I think our current communication is very vague about that. It's not clear to people, to the public, about how aggressive we're going to be in responding to the need to keep inflation at 2%. There continues to be ongoing dialogue about raising rates, even when our outlook for inflation would be below 2%. I think that dialogue is, to the extent that it seems credible to the public, seems to indicate that the 2% target doesn't have the same weight in public's thinking if that continues to be the dialogue. So I think if we're clearer, as I try to be in my speech today, that we're not going to be raising rates until this happens, that provides guidance about what you're going to do in response to the current environment. It provides guidance about what you would do if there were shocks that were adverse in some way as well.
In this speech, when you say we decided the level of monetary stimulus for the economy, what does that mean exactly? Is that...
So that in the past, it's meant a number of things in the past 6 years. It means in the setting of the target rate for the Fed funds rate, one aspect of that. Also, the amount of assets that are being bought is another aspect of that.
Okay, and a follow-up question. When you make changes to the interest rates, you're looking at how it affects the entire nation.
Correct.
But do you think there's some regions that are way more affected by a change FOMC than others?
I don't have that perspective. I think of it as being something that flows through financial markets to the whole country.
In South Dakota, what do you think is missing in our economic picture? Is higher wages the only thing we should be focusing on right now?
Yeah, I think South Dakota, one thing to emphasize is South Dakota has got a very healthy economy, and we want to keep that in mind. You look at, many states would love to have the low unemployment rate, for example, that South Dakota has. I say this about every state in the U.S. is I think we need to be formulating, we need to be thinking about ourselves as operating in a global economy. We want to be thinking about what is going to make us successful in that global economy, not just next year, but in 20 years. I think that over the past 200 years, technological progress has tended to favor those who acquired education. More recently, especially that education has been in science, technology, engineering, mathematics. The past is not a perfect predictor of the future, but might think that's going to be true in the future as well. To the extent that it is, is South Dakota doing what it can to prepare its citizens for that future? But I ask that question to every state. You know, it's not just a South Dakota specific question. And then the thing I would say is, it's important for us to think about ourselves and evaluate how we're doing in terms of, say, education relative to the world, and not just think about how we're doing relative to the other 50 states, or the 49 states.
I think just on where the markets are as far as pricing liftoff versus Fed, after the jobs report, do you think that the level of correctness has increased or decreased with respect to rent?
Yeah, this is not something I'm paying a lot of attention to, frankly. You know, my goal is to try to articulate as best I can how I see what the appropriate course of policy should be.
Thank you, Rina. Thank you.